art by KBOO Foundation members, and a grant from Portland's gay and lesbian community Yellow Pages, providing a wide array of gay-friendly business listings. More information at 503-230-7701 or www.pdxgayyellowpages.com. Also, Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946, with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-0212 or on the web at radiocab.net. Stay tuned for Out Loud.
Good evening and welcome to Out Loud, KBOO's queer news public affairs show. Out Loud is produced by the Queer Boo Collective, which includes Carla, Audra Robinson, and me, Rebecca Weatherby. We'd love to hear your comments, questions, announcements, and events. You can contact us by email at OOOOutloud, that's three O's, at yahoo.com. And tonight, the topic will be the Academy Awards and the representation as it is of the gays and lesbians and bisexuals, transgendered and queers in Hollywood. Our guest is Don Taylor, who writes for DVDjournal.com and also the Portland Tribune, and also is on the second and fourth Wednesdays from 9 to 9:30. First up, we'll have Audra with a little tribute to Octavia Butler, who passed last Saturday.
Thank you, Rebecca. Yeah, I'd like to, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. I'd like to just take a moment to pay tribute to Octavia Butler. Octavia Butler died last Friday, February 24th, at her home in Seattle, Washington. She was 58. Butler was one of a few African-American science fiction writers, a pioneer in the genre, and my favorite author. Butler grew up in California, an only child. She was very shy in school and described herself as a daydreamer. She overcame dyslexia and began writing when she was 10 years old to escape loneliness and boredom. She published her first novel, Pattern Master, in 1976 and went on to publish nearly 20 novels and books. Butler was the subject of much critical acclaim, receiving the Penn Center West Lifetime Achievement Award, 2 Nebula Awards, and 2 Hugo Awards. And in 1995, she was the recipient of a $295,000 MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. She is the only science fiction writer to have done so. The awards and accolades were much deserved, as Butler dealt with weighty subjects such as race, class, sexuality, and global politics. It has been written about Butler that the reader is initially drawn in by her utterly unexpected power and subtly complex intelligence, and sustained and even compelled by the rich dramatic textures and profound psychological insights. Here's an example of her insight and ability. This passage is from The Parable of the Talents, a book written in the early 1990s. In this passage, she writes about a character in the books who, well, is someone who's taking the country fascist and who manages to get elected president and who, oddly enough, comes from Texas. The passage reads, "Choose your leaders with wisdom and forethought. To be led by a coward is to be controlled by all that the coward fears. To be led by a fool is to be led by the opportunists who control the fool. To be led by a thief is to offer up your most precious treasures to be stolen. To be led by a liar is to ask to be lied to. To be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love into slavery. Beware, all too often we say that we hear others say. We think what we are told that we think. We see what we are permitted to see. Worse, we see what we are told that we see. Repetition and pride are the keys to this. To to hear and to see even an obvious lie again and again and again, maybe so that it almost by reflex, and then to defend it because we have said it, and at last to embrace it because we have defended it. Butler's last work was a novel called Fledgling, about a black vampire who was the product of genetic experimentation. That book was released last fall. Octavia Butler, thank you for the years of challenging entertainment. May you rest in peace.
Thank you. That was very nice. And in other news, I have a little Brokeback news. Planet Out reports that Taiwan's chief cited Brokeback in a speech to U.S. business leaders. President Chen Shui-bian cited the film Brokeback Mountain to illustrate the potential for U.S.-Taiwan relations. The president's remarks, part of the annual Xi Nian Fan dinner held by the American Chamber of Commerce in Taipei, were posted on a government website on Friday. Chen told attendees that Brokeback Mountain, the acclaimed film by Taiwanese director Ang Lee, is about more than homosexual love. The most profound lesson we should take away transcends the narration of the love affairs in this movie, he said. It motivates us instead to understand that all of us are bound to make difficult decisions in life, yet we must strive to dispel prejudice, create trust, uphold mutual respect, and seek ways to reconcile and cooperate with one another. Because only by doing so can we together reach the frontier of a great new world. So, inspiring words from the Taiwan president, Chen Shui-bian. And I don't think we'll hear Bush saying many things like that about Brokeback Mountain, which will be the topic of tonight's show in just a few minutes. Okay, welcome to Out Loud and our Academy, our pre-Academy Awards show. We're doing a little pre-red carpet rollout here, discussing the possible gay sweep of this year's or the 2005 award lineup. As people might have heard about Brokeback, but which is nominated for the Best Picture. Also, there's Philip Seymour Hoffman and Capote, and this is for leading role, actually, that I'm reading now, and Heath Ledger, who played the main protagonist in Brokeback, and then Joaquin Phoenix for his Johnny Cash portrayal, David Strathairn in Good Night and Good Luck, and Terrence Howard in Hustle and Flow. I'm here with Don Taylor, and I guess the Academy Awards, like, what are they for? Like, why?
What's the point, really?
What's the point?
Well, if you're cynical at all, you can say that it's really just sort of a yearly wank fest where they all pat themselves on the back and congratulate themselves for a year of money making well done. It's also an opportunity for studios to trot out what they see as their best product and try and get a little bit more money out of it, but also to I don't know. The best way to put it is to position themselves as a prestige company. It's really, to be honest, it's really not that much different from any other industry where you've got people who make floor tiles, for example, will have their national floor tile convention and they'll give awards to each other for who had the best, you know, linoleum. It's really just an industry thing where they pretty much congratulate each other, and it gives them an opportunity to advertise their movies more.
Well, but there's also the Screen Actors Guild and the Golden Globes and
the Independent Spirit Awards and the BAFTAs, the British Film Thing, and then every single critics group and newspaper syndicate and stuff has their own award. So it's, yeah, everybody just starts throwing awards at each other at this time of year. And this year it's surprisingly and actually a pretty good slate of movies. Some years they've been movies that you've looked at and you've just shaken your head in disgust and thought, why the hell would anybody want to give an award to any of those? But this year they're actually awarding some pretty darn fine movies.
How do you think the Academy kind of approaches controversy?
I think, well, the thing a lot of people don't seem to really understand about Hollywood is that they don't have an agenda per se. They don't really think too much about controversy. They don't really care about being progressive or even being regressive. What they care about is making money. And if, for example, we're seeing a bunch of, you know, we're seeing gay-themed movies, we're seeing Felicity Huffman being awarded for Transamerica, these movies are had a high profile this year. And it's kind of a flavor of the month sort of a thing, unfortunately. It's that all they care, if we have not seen many gay and lesbian themed movies up to this point, it's simply because studio executives believe, rightly or wrongly, that there aren't enough ticket buyers to support those themes. If we have movies like Brokeback Mountain that win Academy Awards, we have movies like Capote that actually have people coming out and buying tickets for them, they will say, aha, people will buy tickets to see these movies. And then you will see more gay-themed movies. Unfortunately, a lot of them will be terrible. And then they won't make money. And then the studio executives will say, gosh, we should keep making movies about white heterosexual males because we know that'll sell tickets. And it'll go back basically back to the status quo.
Well, Brokeback, interestingly, all the pictures, which was actually Brokeback Mountain, Crash, Munich, Good Night and Good Luck, and Capote, made under 100, have grossed as of last week under $100 million dollars, which I guess is pennies.
Yeah, no, this is one of the first years in a very long time that none of the movies nominated for Best Picture are in the top 10 box office right now at all.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting turn of events. Part of it, I think, is influenced by the popularity of independent films. People are seeing independent films as being better than the Hollywood product, and the studios that are putting out these sort of faux indie movies. They're not actually indie movies because they're put out by Sony and Universal and New Line, but they've kind of got that cachet of being indie-like, and that's what we're starting to see get nominations in the Academy Awards and such.
Is it possible if let's say, the Screen Actors Guild, who are actually the people that vote on the movies, is it possible if they did have an agenda, would it be to kind of wake up Hollywood?
Possibly.
I think explain these nominations.
It's I don't know. I mean, the vast majority of people in the entertainment industry, I believe, you know, really do identify themselves as progressives. And I think that if they were to have an agenda, they definitely would have an agenda. But also look at from my point of view, I just always look at how underrepresented gays and lesbians still are in movies. It's actually been surprisingly, even though the neocons and the right-wingers and the people who are against Hollywood tend to point at the movies as being the ones who have the agenda, they're trying to push the agenda.
It's the gay Hollywood mafia.
But it's been television that has actually led the charge on this. It's been television that has gone forward and has done gay-themed programming and has introduced gay characters on regular network television shows. So it's actually, I think it's Hollywood kind of basically saying, okay, now that somebody else has taken the risk, we'll put a little bit money this way and see what happens. And again, if you know, they're about selling product, pure and simple. And if there is a market for gay and lesbian and transgender, if there was a movie that was all about a transgendered Samoan basketball player, next year you'll see 5 movies about transgendered Samoan basketball players and a TV miniseries and a sitcom, because they would say, oh, this is something that'll make money. We'll all go in that direction.
So do you think we'll soon be talking about gay-sploitation films.
Quite possibly. It's certainly a nice change of pace. It's just, I don't know. I tend to be a little bit cynical, though, because you just look at, you know, the studios tend to be run by, they're run mostly by white heterosexual males. They have figured out that their target audience that spends the most money on tickets are white males between the ages of 18 and 25. And they target they focus most of their efforts towards that audience. The women's movement was, the height of the women's movement was 30 years ago. The height of the civil rights movement was 40 years ago. And we still see women and blacks and other minorities grossly underrepresented in movies when you look at what the actual demographic is. You know, women in most movies, except for the occasional film that is focused purely on women, they're still, in most movies, they're the wife, the girlfriend, or the slut. You have precious few roles for black actors, except for a certain small niche market that has been created for this very urban black, usually a comedy movie things. And honestly, if you just dropped down onto Earth from another planet and you were watching movies to figure out what was going on in the world, you wouldn't know that Asians existed at all. You don't see them in movies. So it's kind of hard to say whether... As I spoke to you earlier today, and I do believe that this is in one way very encouraging, that it does indicate that as a culture, we're becoming increasingly less homophobic. But as far as whether or not this will become a trend in movies, if you look at the way women and blacks and Hispanics and Asians and anyone else who isn't white and male is represented in Hollywood films, I wouldn't say, I'd say don't get your hopes up anytime soon.
So it kind of seems like a symbiotic, really, like the moviegoers shape the movies, but then the movies also, you know,
oh yeah,
kind of, you know, shape everyone else's viewpoint. So it's this funny, you know, paradox.
Very much so. But I think it's also really encouraging. When a movie like Brokeback Mountain, the importance, I think, is not so much how much money it's made and how many people have seen it, but the fact that it opens up a public dialogue, that you have, you know, everything from, you know, comic strips to Jay Leno making jokes about it. And some of the jokes are regressive, of course, you know, a lot of hey, 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 gay cowboy, now we know what cowpoke means, yeah. But at the same time, it is a dialogue. It's not something we now have, we're seeing homosexuality as something that is actually okay to joke about, actually okay to talk about, that we have a major motion picture about two men loving each other that's actually, you know, up for an Academy Award. And in its own way, that is huge, despite what it's going to mean for movies in general. I think culturally, that's absolutely huge. If you look at where we were, you know, 30 years ago, 50 years ago.
And one of the things about Brokeback is that it's a big... It actually has the largest budget of any movie, gay-themed mm-hmm. movie, where not like Philadelphia, but where the focus is a gay love story, is one of the things that makes it significant. And also, obviously, the dialogue that has come up from it. So did you saw Brokeback?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Brokeback Mountain.
See, it's already part of our vernacular. Brokeback.
Oh, yeah, it's become its own little, it's like Watergate or Kleenex. It's become a little code phrase for things.
And are you a fan of Annie Proulx?
I am not a fan of Annie Proulx. I'll say that I tried to read the shipping news and I threw it across the room in disgust. I thought it was a horrible, horribly written book. On the other hand, I am a big fan of Larry McMurtry, mm-hmm. and I love Ang Lee. So I went into the movie kind of going, okay, this could go either way, and was delighted to discover that I just loved the film. It really was one of my favorite films of the year. I cried, and I'm a hard sell. It's hard to make me cry, and I was just weeping like Nancy Kerrigan at the end of that thing. So,
so one of the... you know, the criticisms, and this is a spoiler, so if you haven't seen the movie...
Plug your ears. If you haven't seen it, plug your ears.
Is that, what you know, one of the main characters dies, or it's alluded to that he dies a tragic death instead of the gay cowboys riding off into the sunset together. And what do you think, could you imagine an alternate ending for that movie and still
Unfortunately, I think it's, I don't know, you could look at it, again, very cynically and say that this is another case where we still haven't reached the point where you can have a love story like that without it ending tragically. They can't just live happily ever after. Somebody's got to suffer. On the other hand, though, that is one of the great tropes of movie making. You look back at movies like Dark Victory with Bette Davis. You know, again, you know, she falls in love with Paul Heinrich. They have trouble. They can't get together. Finally, they kind of, you know, admit their love to each other. And she dies, and everybody cries and goes home all weepy. So in a way, you know, I mean, the tragic love story is a template in and of itself. And I think more notable than that, I think, is probably to take a look at the fact that of all of these characters that we're looking at in these films that have been nominated, not a single one of them was actually played by a gay or transgender person. And that's where you start getting into the iffiness of how seriously does Hollywood take this? Is this really a trend towards acceptance of gay characters as full-fledged characters on the same playing field as heterosexual characters, or is this more of like Tom Cruise playing a guy without legs, Tom Hanks being brave because he played a guy with AIDS, you know, Sean Penn playing a retarded guy? Is it stunt casting? Is mm-hmm. it like, are these, is it okay to make a movie about gay people as long as you have a straight actor in the role? Or are people still going to be too uncomfortable, supposedly, which I don't believe. I don't believe people. I mean, people know Daniel Day-Lewis is gay, and they go see movies with him in them. They don't care.
I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
You scooped me.
Oh, hey, what do you know? And Danny Kaye hadn't. No, never.
No.
But this, I think that, I don't know. That's the thing that concerns me, is that it's still more, there's still that underlying belief that it's brave to play gay because gay is other. Gay is different. Gay is something that potentially scary, but that it's okay to make movies about gay people if you've got a straight actor in the role because that's like less threatening to most audiences. And that's an uncomfortable area of thought to get into, is like, is this really a progressive thing that we're doing here? Or is this really just more of, you know, taking a group of people and turning them into some kind of, I don't know, a freak show to slow down and look at for 2 hours because you bought a ticket to take a peek into their lives, and then you can like, but you can be comfortable with it because, you know, Heath Ledger isn't really gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no answer to those questions. I really
sure.
don't. It's just one of those weird lines of thought that. I think that when you actually have out gay actors who are playing gay characters and nobody cares, everybody's just thinking about whether or not it's a good movie,
mm-hmm.
then you can say, you know, we've won a battle. But until that time, at this point, it's still baby steps.
And so did you see Capote?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see it. From what I heard, it really focused on Capote's relationship with Petty.
Yeah, it takes place. It's a really terrific biopic, in that most biography movies tend to have too big of a sweep, and this really focuses on the time period when he was writing in Cold Blood, and he got to know the killers, and he actually fell in love with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
He and had the uncomfortable situation of where he couldn't finish his book until they were executed. And so he kind of, in his own way, had to hope for that to happen so he could finish his work. But he didn't want to see them die because he cared about them very much. And it's really a very moving movie. And his portrayal, from everything Capote is somebody that we've seen for years in, you know, footage of on old TV shows he did, television interviews and stuff. So you know what he looks like and what his mannerisms mm-hmm. were, how he spoke. And Hoffman nailed him. He really did. He did an excellent, excellent job.
Do you feel as though, you know, the generation or people in their 20s or teens would see that and understand what was so important about In Cold Blood? As being, you know, breakthrough investigative journalism.
Maybe. I think so. I think that I think it does a little bit. It's kind of, I think it is something that kind of, you have to know the context perhaps to understand how groundbreaking it was. But at the same time, the film itself ends up being so much about the man and about the relationships that the fact that it is about this book that completely changed journalism as we know it is sort of, in its own way, is kind of secondary to the more human story. It really is a very, very good and very, very human film. I hope he wins. I really do, because he absolutely deserves it.
So, in wrapping up,
okay.
Do you want to put it out there who you think will win Best Picture?
Oh, gosh.
And Best Actor and Best Actress.
I've always been...
For the record.
Oh, for the record. I usually do this and then I usually end up being wrong. I'll go with the mainstream and say that I think Brokeback Mountain will win. I think it will. It's just so hugely popular and people love it. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman will win for Capote. And I would like to see Felicity Huffman win Best Actress, but I think it will probably be Reese Witherspoon because the Academy loves those actors playing famous people in singing movies thing. And she didn't impress me that much, but I think she's going to be the one who wins.
Well, thank you very much, Dawn. And,
thanks for having me.
This has been Dawn Taylor, who writes for the Portland Tribune and DVDjournal.com. And she's on Movie Talk on 2nd and 4th Wednesdays, 9 to 9:30.
Thank you very much.
Go to sleep, may your sweet dreams come true. Just lay back in my arms for calls me sometimes, saying this one's the love of your life. 'Cause I know a love that will never...
And now for a few announcements. Tonight, there's some activities for your brain. Gay writer Matthew Stadler hosts The Back Room, an occasional series of intellectual presentations featuring dinner, drinks, and live music at RIPE. Tonight's guest is Portland artist Daniel Duford, who will make 50 ceramic bowls illustrating a serial tale that will unfold when the diners eat their meals to reveal what lies at the bottom. It's at 7 o'clock at 2240 North Interstate Avenue.
And tonight, in other words, at their new location at East Northeast Killingsworth, which is at Killingsworth and Williams, there'll be Last Word Open Mic Zine Read at 8 o'clock. And tomorrow, Arthur T. Cooper, a one-time member of the drag king group The Backdoor Boys, reads from her acclaimed novel, Lipschitz Six or Two Angry Blondes, a tale of Jewish immigrants and an Eminem impersonator. That'll be at Powell's on Burnside at 7:30.
Darcelle's presents the 8th Annual Stars Twinkle and Shine Benefit Show and Dessert Buffet. Proceeds benefit Camp Starlight, an annual adventure for an amazing group of spirited, courageous, and energetic 5 to 17-year-olds whose lives have been affected by HIV/AIDS. A donation will be requested, and the show starts at 8 at Darcelle's on Northwest 3rd.
And on Saturday, March 4th, Cubeland and Love Tribe present Beyond Trolls and Twinks, a playful, interactive event where men will explore age stereotypes to begin to discover their true gifts. And you can find out more at lovetribe.org/mensspirit, M-E-N-S-P-I-R-I-T. On Sunday, there's two Oscar events that I know of. One at the Hollywood Theater, they'll host Oscar Night America, featuring free popcorn and soda, a light box dinner, and a special gift bag. The honorary co-chairs will be Portland animator and Oscar winner Will Vinton and Portland First Lady Karen Hansen. Proceeds benefit the Oregon Film and Video Foundation. That'll begin at 4 o'clock at the Hollywood Theater on Saturday. And then there's also a free Oscar party at Zaytoons on Northeast Alberta. Their doors open at 5.
And on March 7th, which is next Tuesday, Michelle T. will read from Rose of No Man's Land at 7 o'clock. And that's at, other, in other words, excellent new location on Northeast Killingsworth and Williams. And that's all for Out Loud. Thanks for joining us tonight. And until next time, stay proud and live out loud.